This is a Floating Voter Budget Special in association with EY Ireland.
Hello, I'm Kevin Doyle, and this is the Floating Voter, independent.ie's political podcast, brought to you today in association with EY Ireland. Coming up, Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue has delivered his first budget, but are we going to be out of pocket? With us today, we have Niall O'Connor, political correspondent, Philip Ryan, as always, and we're delighted to be joined again by Sarah Connellan, personal tax partner with EY, and Professor Neil Gibson, chief economist with EY. I think this is our first time, lads, having a professor on the show. This is, we've had ministers and we've had senators, but no professors yet. I want to start with the politics, Philip. We didn't expect much from Pascal Donoghue. He's never won for fireworks. He likes to play things cool and calm. And that's pretty much what happened. The only thing I think we didn't know about that was in the budget was raising the VAT on sunbeds.
Yeah, that wasn't even very interesting. I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of money for them either. But I think what struck me as well, this seemed like more Pascal Donoghue's budget than Leo Varadkar's budget. The Leo Varadkar that we saw in the Fine Gael leadership campaign who attacked Simon Coveney for wanting to be catch-all, who definitively said he was going to try to appeal to one set of people, said he would focus on squeeze middle-income earners, people who get up early in the morning, blatantly just ignored those people and instead tried to appeal.
He didn't quite ignore them.
He did completely ignore them. If you look at the facts and figures in the expenditure books, or not the expenditure books, in the tax books, a person earning 30 grand a year, a single person, will only benefit €2 extra. And we all know people who work for 30 grand and what type of work they do and how hard they work.
A lot of graduates
come out, and this Republic of Opportunity. So he's rewarding them with €2 a week. That's it. And in a world where we live, and for one of the first time in generations, where we're living in a situation where we will never be as rich as our parents, he is rewarding pensioners with a €5 increase in the budget, with various nonsense telephone allowances or whatever grants that he's given them as well. And he's also given €5 extra on the dole. So he's rewarding people on the dole for staying in bed, not everybody on the dole is staying in bed, but he's rewarding them by €3 more than, say, someone earning 30 grand a year. He's giving them €2 for all the work they do.
All right, you got up early, but on the wrong side, obviously. Niall, what did it deliver for you? Because around Leinster House yesterday, the mood was dull, it was bored, all the usual pomp and ceremony and the bits and bobs that they put in place to make Budget Day seem like the most special day of the year in Leinster House were there, but there was none of the excitement.
Well, yeah, and that's why, you know, Leo uses the term Republic of Opportunity. I really think this was such a missed opportunity, almost like they missed an open goal, because some of the things that should have formed a big feature of this particular budget that the government have actually done well on and worked on, for example, I know I keep writing about it and reporting on it, but the Fair Deal, for example, they have made a huge, huge move on Fair Deal to help
older people,
and their children, to remove that kind of stress in relation to if your elderly mother or father is going into a nursing home. It didn't even feature in the budget. No mention of public housing. This is an affordable housing scheme. I think it's got one mention. And fair enough, the government will say, well, we're going to do this now in our capital plan. But that's not good enough. People were looking yesterday for the proof to back up the rhetoric that we saw from Leo Varadkar and Pascal Donoghue in recent weeks, to back up the hope that they have instilled in us. There was very little mention in relation to transport and infrastructure. I think €9 million was pledged for public transport. €9 million is just double or less than double the amount of money that the government are giving to their new spin machine, the Strategic Communications Unit. So a huge myriad of missed opportunities, and it's actually quite disappointing. Fair enough, Pascal's getting praised for being prudent, and there was all this talk about being Brexit-proofed, etc. But there was no actual concrete measures in relation to Brexit in the budget, other than
it was a €350 million.
No, a loan fund. How's it going to work?
Made up figures. There's €100 million put aside are made up for revenue raising through compliance, which is nonsense that you put in a kind of an alternative budget when you're
straight out of the Fianna Fáil handbook.
Yeah, and even the stamp duty one is just completely made up as well.
Well, neither of you are getting jobs in the spin unit anytime soon. That's fairly clear.
Or EY are higher, I believe.
Sarah, when you were here before the budget, you were talking very much about the competitiveness, and I suppose speaking to Philip's point, I'm guessing you probably agree with a lot of what he said there.
I do agree with Philip, and I also agree with Niall, actually. I think yesterday was a missed opportunity for different reasons than Niall. But yesterday, OK, there was small reduction in the USC, widening of the standard rate band. It's bringing very little, you know, to people's net pockets. You know, €2 for somebody, 30,000, €27 a month for somebody who's on over 70,000. But I think it was a missed opportunity in terms of yesterday was an ideal chance for the minister to outline when we will reduce the tax rates, OK, the personal tax rates. We're not competitive, as I mentioned the other day. We're one of the highest in the OECD. And yesterday, all he had to say was we're at 52% this year. Once we get, you know, the economy going again and we have the money in our pockets, we will reduce that over a period of time. And we'll tell you when that is. And really, I thought that was very disappointing that he didn't address that yesterday.
So the point there, looking at it politically, is that we, our headline on the front page of the Indo this morning would be Pascal's election promise. And perhaps he's trying to avoid that by way of just doing this little bit now and going, there'll be more, but I won't tell you the more.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of have been the downfall of many governments in the past, that we haven't communicated where we want to be. And if we do need to be in a good position post-Brexit, we need to outline where our personal tax rates are going to sit vis-a-vis competition, because otherwise we're not going to win.
So you're not seeing any flood of doctors or nurses or professionals, skilled professionals over from London or wherever on the back of the budget?
No, and the reality is our unemployment levels are back at where we were in 2008. So there's very few available or skilled talent left in the Irish market. So therefore, we need to be in a position to attract foreigners, whether they're UK or otherwise, into Ireland. And our tax regime, our personal tax regime, isn't at the races in that regard.
I think one of the things that emerged yesterday is that we didn't win the bid to the European Medicines Agency. Isn't that correct? That came out
yesterday. Well, Bloomberg are reporting that we're pretty much that way down the list, yeah.
Yeah, that we're not going to get that. And you'd wonder if some of that aspects of that ties into it, people not receiving, like the infrastructure thing as well, but maybe the personal tax rates tie into that too.
Neil, what did you make of it all?
In one sense, I might be slightly more positive than the others around the table.
Oh, thank God.
Who on earth would thought the economist in the room would set a positive tone? But only because I have seen, if we look at budgets, it is the fastest growing economy in Europe, and it's easy to forget that. Unemployment is a lot lower. There are many problems, but they're generally problems of a more successful economy. We're worried about overheating, we're worried about housing, we're worried about the delivery of public services. There are plenty of, I mean, it'll be an interesting contrast to the British budget coming shortly, in which there'll be a much more confident tone with growth that's not even half the Irish rate. So I was quite pleasantly pleased to see that there wasn't a lot of self-aggrandising about the fastest growth, and they went straight into, now I have my reservations about the scale of the measures, but it was good tonally to start with infrastructure and housing, then into public services and commitments to more frontline staff, and finally tax. I would not have liked to have seen a budget that said, we're the fastest growing, this is fantastic, here's a few more euro to help. I was rather happier that was later in the story.
The Economist is being optimistic because everyone else thought it was boring, and he thinks boring is good.
But boring is, that's exciting for an economist. This budget says Christmas Day for economists, just without the presents.
But the stamp duty thing is surely reckless.
Yeah, now the stamp duty is interesting because if you took those headline figures, you would say a market that strong with unemployment that tight, you could afford a rate that was more, let's put it this way, normal or previous.
Let's just explain it for people who haven't, I suppose, been tuned in. But basically what he has done, commercial property land sales has raised stamp duty from 2% to 6%. So essentially, if you're buying commercial land for €1 million, instead of paying €20,000, you're now paying €60,000 in the tax. And basically that's funding almost €400 million.
Yes, unless you look to residential development. Now, in one of the most successful cities in Europe, that's an affordable rate. The question is the regional dimension to that. So for markets outside of Dublin that are finding things a lot tougher, where the commercial market is not as strong, and then with this push towards residential, the risk you have is development of, I have this great fear of sites being bought and one house being built on it. You know, you have a desire for residential when many of those other markets maybe need more commercial.
Farmers.
Yeah, that I think that's a hugely, it's going to be really interesting to what they do on this regional piece going forward, because very difficult job to balance, to have a to try and craft policies that work for a Dublin market that don't have detrimental effects elsewhere. So it'll be interesting to see on the infrastructure piece where that spending goes. Obviously, it wasn't the budget, there wasn't the place to mention that, but when we see the detail of that, you've got to try and facilitate a fast-growing city, but not alienate the electorate elsewhere and try to get the market to help you put opportunity
it's
elsewhere.
It's the electorate
that's
elsewhere
tough.
That are so important to Fine Gael. Like,
hugely
they are
important.
The party of the farmers, the party of the rural person.
Yeah. But this idea, can you have two tax codes, one for a city and one for
no,
a...
No, you can't. So what you tend to do, and certainly in, you could have, on stamp duty, you have more control than you do, say, on things like VAT and so forth, where you can't. So what you're looking at is very often is more incentives or reliefs or other ways
but
to mitigate against it.
But you can regionalise those.
You can regionalise what type. And you've got to be careful there too with EU regulations in terms of what you can offer in different places, state aid rules. Mm. However, what you kind of hope for in an economic sense is that you do have a bigger price differential where it is more advantageous for firms to maybe look to relocate. Something that wasn't mentioned at all, but I'd be surprised if we don't see come back onto the agenda in the medium term, is talking about public sector jobs and where they might be located and trying to give a helping hand.
Decentralisation.
Yeah, that's never had a very successful track record, but it is interesting that that's where a lot of other places have gone once they get very, very expensive. So I think that regional piece will become very interesting. But as a budget speech, to not to spend too much time self-aggrandizing is to be commended. But being a true economist, I'm also going to then criticize what I've just praised. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit fearful in tone. So the word Brexit appeared 17 times. It's not surprising that we mentioned Brexit. Of course, it's a big risk on the horizon. But there's a sense of confidence I would like to see with Ireland about saying, look, if we're the fastest growing economy and we want to stay top of that chart, then there are some big investments we need to make around infrastructure, around public services, and we're going to go forward confidently as Europe's fastest growing economy. I'm not surprised they didn't have any precision about what to do in Brexit, because we don't know what incentives will be needed. But if you look at the word risk, the word challenge appeared twice as many times as the word opportunity. The word digital didn't appear once. The word global only appeared once. The USA only got one mention. So it was very much we're keeping things back. We're a little nervous about Brexit. And whilst I don't want to say that we shouldn't be concerned about that, I think with Ireland's position and where it is, I'd be more worried about the problems you can see right now, which is around housing and infrastructure.
If you're a small business in wherever, in Wicklow or Killara, Carlow, and you are kind of hesitating about expanding, hiring an extra couple of staff because of Brexit, because you do export, you do trade with the North, are you going to have more confidence about hiring those extra staff today than you were yesterday? I don't think you are.
No.
And that's the missed opportunity. The one thing I think it's fascinating now that for the first time in years we're actually talking about these various different taxes that we've never spoken about for the last few years, because we know that the Mandarins in the Department of Finance are so against meddling with the tax system. And it is good, though, and on a positive note, at least Pascal Donoghue has shown the courage to finally introduce new taxes like the sugar tax, although the devil is going to be in the detail on that one, but also look at things like the commercial stamp duty, like the vacant tax levy, particularly in terms of addressing these hoarders, these guys who apparently are sitting on the massive parcels of land outside of the city, seeing the price of this land going up on a weekly basis and are doing nothing about it. They should be doing something about it, and about time that the government, and I think that was one of the best policy measures announced
yesterday. Yeah, tax is going in that direction of behavioural, where we're trying to influence the behaviour of people in a way, and this is throughout the world, looking for the ways. We know our public services need more revenue, so you're trying to find acceptable ways of raising tax. So the question is, what else can you put in the sin basket?
Yeah. Mm.
Sunbeds has joined the party now. What will come next in terms of things that we would prefer we didn't do?
We don't usually reference other newspapers, but I thought The Sun did quite well this morning with the Taoiseach as Willy Wonka, but then they had an Oompa Loompa down in the bottom corner of the page. But Sarah, you were impressed by the KEEP programme. That was one of the things you pulled out.
Yeah, it is actually very interesting.
Maybe just explain,
Kevin,
what it is, I suppose, for a start.
So let me talk about share awards, the delivery of share awards to employees in the past. So if you had an individual in a private company versus an individual in a public company, the taxing point is when you actually get a share, okay, or get a share option is the exercise point. And if you're in a public company, you can sell shares to fund the tax cost. If you're in a private company, there's no market for that share. So it was a huge disadvantage for any indigenous business or any individual in a private company, because there was no market for the share, so that incentive wasn't there. So the KEEP programme was introduced yesterday by the minister, and what is called as the Key Employee Engagement Programme. And what it does is, in simple terms, it shifts the tax point to the point of sale, and it introduces capital gains tax instead of income tax. So it means that anybody in the private sector can get a stake in the business, and they only have to pay tax at capital gains tax rates, which is a benefit of 19% when they sell the share. So that puts them back on the same footing as an employee in the pub, in a public company, which is fair and equitable. And that would have been lobbying that we had done over the years. So finally, at least, I think there is...
You're claiming this one.
I am, absolutely.
Yeah. Was that the simple version? I'm glad I'm an economist. Any matter of detail, ask Sarah.
So buy shares in I&M is what you're telling us to do, basically.
Couldn't possibly.
That was a long pause. Let's move on quickly. We'll move on quickly. The infrastructure, I know he's talking about the money for the capital plan, which we'll get. I hear it's not going to be till the end of November now. It's been pushed back again by a few weeks. He did seem to be holding back. I know you mentioned, Niall, that there was very little around transport and all the rest of it. The capital plan might actually be more important than the budget, because that's where TDs and backbenchers will really get upset once we start to discover who's getting the bypasses and who isn't, Philip.
No, this is when they'll all have their shovels bought and their boots and their hard hats ready to turn sods around the country. And I think it's well known at this stage, some of the projects that's going to come ahead. Like, there is various bypasses ready, and like they have been signaled for a long time. They've been signaling them over and over again. But it is the type of projects that we need to keep the economy going. Like, that'll provide much needed jobs. You'll see more people coming in probably from the EU to work here again. I'd say we'd return to that. They're hoping to get employment back to the normal level next year. And a lot of these projects will help on that.
Neil, what is the gap in infrastructure, as you'd see it? Because Dublin is pretty much full. All you do is move around the streets, and the streets are full as it is. But once you go outside it, rural Ireland, there's not much going on.
Yeah, and that's what makes the exercise quite difficult. I mean, you have a backlog of work that hasn't been done over the last decade that's required. But it's the difficult balancing act, because if you build houses, that's not going to solve the problem. And there's all sorts of infrastructure that people, the public, don't think about. You know, sewage systems, waters, electricity grids, all sorts of things required. What I was slightly disappointed was there wasn't enough mention of the scale of the infrastructure challenge. So they talked about the bit that the government is going to commit. It's going to need private money too. It's going to need innovative funding methods. Global capital is interested in toll roads, in ways that it can invest in public infrastructure and get a return from. And to be honest, the scale of the challenge is such, because we might think about the congested Dublin and think of the huge cost required. Say you decide just to build up and allow people to live in the city. The footpaths are not wide enough for the volume of people it would produce. There's huge infrastructure challenges to retrofit. So you have to think 20, 30, well below political cycles, to say how big are we aiming so that we can plan infrastructure accordingly, and what do we think will go into our other locations. Now, that strategic planning is both difficult and politically very difficult, because you're almost predestining how certain labour markets are going to perform. So in a reality, what happens is you try your best to accommodate whatever the market's asking, and the market is very strongly demanding Dublin. It doesn't look like you'll be able to do all the infrastructure fit that you need. You don't have the rail network, you don't have. So that almost every place we look at could eat all of the budget that's been allocated. So it will be a very important document as to what's won the lobbying battle for what needs done. But you will have to spread growth, because Dublin has long-standing physical infrastructure challenges that won't be easily met by 2, 3, 4 year infrastructure programmes.
Yeah, Kevin, like you mentioned the European Medicines Agency earlier. So just to remind people, this is the big, big expectation has been raised by Simon Harris, the health minister, that we'll draft in this massive EU power as a result of Brexit. So they're based in London, so they have to leave. Will they go to Dublin? Will they go to Berlin? 900 jobs. We've also tried to get the banking association, or the IBA, I think they're called. So Neil, if you're a senior figure in the EMA, right, the medicals agency, and you're weighing up whether it's Dublin or it's Berlin or it's Paris or whatever, where do you put infrastructure? Because if infrastructure is a massive criteria, a massive qualifying factor, then we've lost straight away.
It is a very important factor, and it also comes, the difficulty, which makes it more complicated, it's a package, so quality of life matters. Mm-hmm. Can you get your kids into a good school? What's the hospital care like? And then that shows you the complexity of the problem into what you're competing for, and you're trying to guess not what it looks like next year, but what's this going to look like in 5 years? And unfortunately, what analysts tend to do is, well, what did the last 2 years look like? So if you've got very fast growth rates and high price rises in, say, rental and property costs, then the natural expectation is, well, that's what it's going to look like in the short term.
And you haven't even mentioned the marginal rate of tax.
Yeah, so that puts you in a difficult position. Yeah. The marginal rate of tax is interesting because what, and it's not alone to Ireland here, what you have is a desire for tax and taxes and Swedish public services, and the marginal rate's a lot higher than Sweden, but we don't want to be in the position of willing to pay. So you've got this balance again of what's the identity of the country, just how important is public service and how much are we willing to pay for that. Now, Ireland's not the only country wrestling with that challenge, but it is amazingly, to me, it's hugely important when you see investors and you site visits, and we've clients over. What they want to know is all the human things. Well, where will I live? What are the schools like? Those are so that's why, although
what
it's
do you
a
mean
small
I have
point,
to baptize my child.
It's an important. I'm not sure that's in my skill set, but there's an important piece on. You know that they mentioned it, and I know there's some pre-announced, but the public service investment, more in frontline staff, is a critical need for Ireland, and the bottom line is. Too costs money.
But I think we're in big trouble in terms of trying to attract foreign people, and that would include UK people. So our domestic rate's far too high, and we've said that before. But we also have an expat regime, which applies to anybody, Irish or otherwise, returning to Ireland who hasn't been here for 5 years. But it only applies to the high earners, so you have to have an entry level of 75,000. Exactly, special assignment relief programme. It only applies to anyone over 75,000 euro. And we're not going to be in a position to attract, you know, the normal Joe Soap or whoever back to Ireland if they haven't been here for 5 years. And it only becomes really competitive around about the 250 mark.
But Sarah, if there was a, because this was proposed last year by Mary Mitchell O'Connor when she was jobs minister, this special, I think it was a 30% tax rate for the emigrants, and it got absolutely shot down in quite humiliating fashion for her, and she's now been by Enda Kenny at the time. But as someone like, if I was speaking selfishly, as someone who's, you know, a young professional on the higher rate, has been working here for a number of years, didn't leave, I would resent. My friends who went over to the Emirates or went over to London, if they were lured back by this special tax rate, we're paying a 5-10%.
And I understand that, but we have a labour issue. We've reached almost cap in Ireland, so we have everybody in Ireland paying tax and we're at full capacity. We need to attract other people back to Ireland, whether they're Irish or otherwise.
So you'd be supportive of that kind of tax?
Well, it's in existence already.
The
Sarah but for 75, like, there's not many people in their 20s, for example, who are earning 75 grand.
But how are we going to support that labour requirement that we have otherwise, unless we attract people back?
But Sarah only applies to tech, does it, or is it?
It applies to anybody.
So you could be in Ernst & Young and they get someone over working on the same position as you and paying half the taxes you pay.
You're eligible for a 5-year period after you arrive back to Ireland.
Yeah. But you don't have to be Irish.
It has so little take up.
Yeah. No, it has take up in the last number of years. It didn't originally when it was introduced in 2012 because the criteria were so stringent. Mm. But they've relaxed the rules and there is quite a high take up now. And to be honest, it applies to both foreign individuals who've never set a foot in Ireland and Irish individuals who've been non-resident for a period of 5 years.
So I could go off to wherever, Dubai, like you were saying the other day, and work there paying no taxes, come back here and pay no taxes doing the same type of thing?
No, you'll still pay tax in Ireland.
But very little tax compared to...
So the relief is 30%...
You're giving them ideas, Sarah.
30% of your income over 75,000 euro is exempt from tax. We wouldn't like to lose them.
It's fascinating, though, and you made a really good point has been made here about Indigenous workers. I think a really important point about Brexit sometimes missed is ignore why Brexit vote went the way it did at your peril. Ireland is now going to be the biggest global investment, in predominantly English-speaking, investment location in Europe. Dublin will be the biggest English-speaking city in which firms can invest, Cork the second in Europe. That will have a natural attraction. There are plenty of people who want English business language, that on their CV. If you bring a volume of people to any economy faster than your services can cope, your housing, your hospitals, your schools, you will create social tensions. No matter how liberal and cosmopolitan a labour market you live in, you will create tensions if your service can't keep up. And that's a hugely important lesson that should come from the Brexit vote. You can't compartmentalise that as purely a British issue. It is an issue about volume. So that's something to be mindful of thinking ahead. We definitely need talent. There's no doubt about that. But you have to do it in a pace at which your services can cope, lest you create some significant tensions that can be quite difficult to deal with politically.
Sarah, I want to ask you about something that kind of went under the radar yesterday, which was an initiative that Kevin Boxer-Moran got Pascal Donoghue to acknowledge, and they haven't put any meat on it yet. But they're talking about tax incentives for people either over 50 or 55. They haven't set the age. It's for companies that take on people in that age bracket. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's probably, you know,
it's a strange one. It strikes me that they're
it goes
not
back to the original point. It's older people getting everything again.
It might be linked to an entirely different issue, which is that we probably have a pension funding issue in a number of years. So occupational pension schemes retirement age is typically 65, whereas our old age contributory pension is going to be about 68 and it'll go to the age 70. So we will have a funding gap of a period of about 5 years, not to mind, you know, whatever's in the pot already. So people will have to work longer. So I suspect that there's, you know, some kind of an angle on that, that we need to encourage older people back into the workforce. I wouldn't have thought 55 was right.
The market wouldn't take care of that. You know, if you're really short of labour, the firms will be innovative and try and how they find it and what training they're willing to offer. So, you know, it was interesting, but I'm surprised that we didn't think the market might take care of that particular problem.
I don't think they've done anything, though. Like, that's the thing.
It's they're setting up a working group, so it'll be next year. But
if you do, I know that we're going completely to another side in relation to spending, but there was no appetite for that, other than Kevin Boxer Moore, and clearly for some reason wanted it. Similarly, like, there was no big chorus for the restoration of the telephone allowance, which, by the way, right, fair enough, it's going to be a small expenditure measure. But it applies to landlines. Like, many of the people listening, they will say that not only their parents, exactly, their grandparents are now using mobiles. Why are we actually, that money could actually be set aside for something really, really small, but really, really important.
They could have put that into the strategic communications unit as well.
Yeah, just bulk it up and give it more. But like, there's very small expenditure measures that cost. Some of them are cost neutral. For example, Jim Daly, the older person's minister, has come up with this idea whereby you will, on your mobile phone, type in the numbers corresponding with the word talk, T-A-L-K, so it's 2882 or whatever, and you will be put through to a central hub if you have an issue with mental health, and you will say, well, it's either alcohol or it's depression, I don't know who to talk to, and then you'll be helped out and sent to that person. A very, very small cost, an extra million, or just being more smart with resources. This is called smart politics, and we didn't see enough of it yesterday. And using money, particularly when you listen to Neil and Sarah and the sort of stuff they're saying in relation to why we can't get people to come to our country to take up jobs that are there, why our labour market is now bordering on crisis point, because we don't have the housing, we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the parks, the schools, and yet then we're spending money on something that nobody wants, the telephone allowance.
It wouldn't be a floating voter unless Niall had his monologue. But I'm going to wrap up, but I want to go around the table. Philip, you can start. Maybe high point, low point of the budget, and marks out of 10.
I suppose the sunbed thing isn't a bad idea. Well, I don't know.
That's
understand.
A high point.
I don't know why people are using sunbeds anymore anyway. Like, that's mental.
But you don't?
No, why are people
where'd you get that tan then?
Philip's a junior.
Yeah, I know. I don't tan. I go red and back to white. Love. But no, that's like, because it's insane that people are still using these.
Redeem yourself there now if that's your high point of the budget.
Seems to be, yeah.
What's low point? I can guess. You're going to have an attack on the old people again, aren't you?
Well, it's just, it seems this huge focus on older people who have plenty
who
of
vote.
Money. Who have plenty of money.
And marks out of 10 then?
4 tops.
Niall?
Or 4 for the €4 we're all going to get a week.
No, my high point is, and I did say that on Monday, and Sarah, I think you'll agree with it, that it's a good thing that we're finally at a point where we can address the scandalous scenario whereby every euro people earned over €33,800, they lost 50 cent on that. Finally, that's changed slightly. It's gone up. The band has changed by €750. That needs to happen next year, the year after, the year after, the year after, because that is the most scandalous part of the tax system as a young worker from my perspective. That's the high point. It's good to see the band change. The low point is just the myriad of missed opportunities and the lack of focus on things and the inability to actually send out a signal to Europe, similar to what Neil is saying. This is what you will see from the British government, and they're in the shits at the moment in relation to Brexit, but they still have the ability to tell Europe and tell the world why, in their eyes, they're a great country. Our budget didn't say that. It didn't tell the world that we're a great country and we're going to make ourselves even better. That's a big missed opportunity from Pascal and Leo.
Marks out of 10?
5.5.
Sarah?
High point, the KEEP programme, definitely it makes it more equitable, so you can reward employees the same way, whether you're a public or a private company. Low point, again, missed opportunity, I think, should have signalled a reduction in the personal tax rates. And another low point was there wasn't enough support given to the entrepreneurial community or the self-employed. There's still a big disadvantage there. So marks out of 10, I would go 5.
Neil, I know you found it so exciting. Well, I suspect you're going to trump all that.
I'm going to give it the top mark here. So high point of the budget, the tone and the lack of self-aggrandizing and the fact that it went biggest issue, housing and infrastructure first, then public service and got the tax last. That's the order I would have done as an economist. Low point of it, not self-confident enough. Too many mentions of Brexit and too fearful of risks that might come and might have a certain shape when we know exactly what some of the big risks are that are already here that need addressed. But it kept a balanced budget, which was good, because you shouldn't give a lot of money away when the receipts are a bit uncertain. So I would probably go, I have to be an economist, so it can't be a round number. I'll go 7.5.
That's pretty good. I think Pascal Donoghue would take the 7.5.
So maybe economists are easy pleased.
Maybe. After all the negativity, we'll finish on the positive. And that is our lot for this week. My thanks to Niall and Philip, as always. To Sarah Kennellan and Professor Neil Gibson from EY. And thanks very much for helping us over the last two podcasts. We'll be back next week with a more normal floating voter with all the goings on from Leinster House.
You've been listening to a Floating Voter budget special in association with EY Ireland.